There's a lot more to talk about this, but we've got an attorney on the line, and I know this is what he's calling about. Kamara, what's up, man?
What's going on? I tried to call you from my cell, but it was like coming out kind of crazy. Can y'all hear me fine?
Yeah, I got you, bro. I got you. We could tell you're in the big conference room with the oak table and the glass statues, man. We know.
Oh, you're funny.
But I'm accurate.
No, you're definitely not accurate. You know, the thing is about the collusion. First of all, Damon, are you going to the show? We'll talk about that.
We'll talk about it. I'm working on it.
Okay. The thing about it is that I think everybody kind of knew about that. There's a bunch of collusion happening with the NFL, and I think what's frustrating is when they would gaslight you and they're saying there's no collusion, there's nothing there, and you're like, it's almost like, don't believe what you see, believe what I tell you, mm-hmm. right? And you know, the hardest part about proving collusion is that nobody wants to be the one to actually be the main witness to it, right? Because we're afraid of the blowback from that coming back. But you mentioned Lamar Jackson, the MVP, could not get a single contract. And then they ended right. up signing, you know, they ended up signing his counterpart who was nowhere in the same stratosphere as Lamar Jackson. So I think that was one of the red herrings. And obviously going back to the Colin Kaepernick and everything like that. But I think what my problem is, the NFLPA is such a weak organization.
Yeah, right. Arguably the worst in sports.
It's the worst in sports. So, okay, now this comes out, but what is going to happen? I think that's my problem. Like, what is the legal leverage that they have? Because they've shown that they don't have the arm to force the NFL to change their ways. The players don't have the power. It's the shield, not the players. And my problem is that this is just going to be a story that people are going to talk about, and then it's going to go away. And they're going to have another example, and have another example, until you have main stalwarts in not just the organization, the NFLPA, but actual star players saying enough is enough. And I don't know if there are players out there that are willing to put their career. It's going to have to be the boy out of KC.
Right.
You know, it's going to have to be a player like that caliber. It can't be like the backup quarterback or, you know, it has to be someone that has such marquee name that is going to be like, okay, we got to listen now.
But Kamara, it has to be like, how would any NFL player be okay with what just went on the last couple of weeks? Like, it doesn't have to be just, I understand Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, and the big dogs. I understand all of that. But how could any football player be like, hold up, our players union, the guys that we elected, our executive committee, is actively working against us?
Well, the problem you have is, okay, you know, you talk about, you know, like the big dogs, but they're fine. Ideally, right? You know, so the Patrick Mahomes, ideally, he's like, I'm fine. Yeah, I'm part of the players, or I am part of the union, but I'm not really. Is my career suffering from it? And I get all the vestiges of being the marquee guy in the league, the face of the league, and that's hard for somebody. You know, especially someone like, I don't want to get into. I don't know Mahomes. We don't know Mahomes. But does he strike you as a person that is going to be like, all right, I'm going to stand for no. So the issue is, like you're saying, how can players not rally? You need the top player. Like let's say a counterpart in the NBA. If LeBron says, even though he's not what he once was 5, 6, 7 years ago, but LeBron says his voice alone will cause a ripple effect on how the league reacts,
yeah,
right?
Right.
And even though when they're talking about two different scenarios, two different players' associations, whatnot, I get all that. It's not apples to apples. But we have to acknowledge that how can players continue to go on? You need the big domino to fall. And until the big domino falls, the NFL is not going to react. And the big domino is never going to fall because they're going to feed the big domino. You're going to get all the looks. You're getting all the love. You're not like the rest of these guys. You're different. You're different.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's my opinion on it all, man.
I appreciate you, man. Thank you for your perspective, especially from attorney. That's our man Kamara out there calling from Orlando. He's trying to get me. Kamara always calling, trying to get me to spend money. And I'm gonna tell you something. He's about this close to pulling it off. Like he's going. I'll tell y'all about it later because we're talking about something right now. But to me, this is a scandal. And that's the part that frustrates me. And the what really frustrates me is that Kamara's right. It does. It's going to have to be Lamar. It's going to have to be Patrick Mahomes. It's going to have to be one of those big dogs to say something when in actuality, the backup lineman who pays his dues to the union should be furious. It doesn't have to just be Lamar Jackson and Russell Wilson that are upset. The guys who were named in this, the guys who I actually think testified in this arbitration rule, it's not just them. Every NFL player who has learned that the Players Association that they elected has worked to keep their money at a lower premium should be offended. But here's what it all boils down to for Roger Goodell and the rest of those owners. It doesn't matter. They don't care. The players don't care. All because you don't care. And that's fine. You don't. I just laid out the Colin Kaepernick situation. Y'all know how I felt about Colin Kaepernick for the last 9 years. You know how I felt about what he stood for. You know how I felt about that whole situation. Many of you felt the same exact way. It wasn't enough for you to stop watching. It wasn't enough for me to quit my job and walk away and say, because I can't do this job and not cover the NFL. So it wasn't enough for me to quit my job and walk away. And for most people, that's going to be the case. Because think about it. What scandal in NFL history has ever rattled them? Aaron Hernandez likely killed multiple people as a player. Nothing. Ray Lewis almost certainly murdered somebody. Bro won the Super Bowl the next year. Then he's all of a sudden He's Big E from the New Day. He's the power of positivity. It's a new day. Yes, it is. Y'all remember Ray Carruth? No one cared. These are extreme examples. I just named three examples of murder. Didn't affect the NFL one bit. What about the integrity of the game? What about Spygate? What happened with Spygate? Anyone remember? No. Not what Spygate was. Everybody knows what it was. But what happened after? They destroyed the tapes. They learned from Frost Nixon. They learned from the White House tapes. Richard Nixon essentially set up Watergate on the phone lines. They learned. Destroy the tapes. That's what they did. They have minimized Deflategate for a decade and some change, but didn't give us the opportunity to see what it actually was. Oh, everybody knows plays. Oh, that's what defenses do. They study film. How is it different? You think studying film is the same thing as watching a team run through their plays on the football field? Run through their specific plays that are set up for this specific team? Okay, that's fine if you think it is. That's perfectly fine if you think it is. Put the tape in and let us see it then. Put the tape in and let us see how minimal of an impact Deflategate had. They did it because they can't. Because they know that's not true, so they destroyed the tapes so no one will ever know. Deflategate overtook an entire season, no one cared. In the end, no one cared. Hell, I just mentioned three instances of scandal that involved one football team. Three instances of scandal that involved one football team, one coach, one owner. No one cares. The NFL openly admitted to those racially based tests that they had to get rid of like a year ago, those cognitive tests. Let's call it race norming. What was, I can't remember what that was called. Casey and I were talking about it like a month or two ago. Openly admitted to that. Openly admitted to screwing over black players and their retirement funds since the history of the league. No one cared. And this is the same thing. The NFL owners are working with the elected officials of the NFL Players Association Executive Committee, whose president, Lloyd Howell, is actually part-timing for a company that has been allowed to be one of the venture capital companies that's allowed to invest in the NFL. Meaning, he has a direct conflict of interest as the president of the Players Association. How did he get elected, you ask? Great question. No one knows. Absolutely nobody knows. And here's the saddest part. I'm sitting here in Sacramento, California. I'm sitting here in the Odyssey Studios of ESPN 1320. It's not my job to know. But Juwan Jennings, who is demanding a new contract, it's his job to know. He doesn't. Your favorite football team, the shirt that you had, all those players on that team, those 50-some-odd players, it's their job to know. They don't. That jersey you got on your back, it's their job to know. They don't. They don't know how he got elected either. And you know what? They probably don't care. Maybe a few of them do. But so the executive committee backed Lloyd Howe after all of this. They backed their executive vice president yesterday. Just yesterday. From murder to cheating to just flat out screwing over your players. There is no scandal that the NFL can't survive. The only one that would ruin them is something involving gambling, because that's all this boils down to. The interest in the NFL is so vast because you, the diehard football fan, and your group of diehard football fans can launch this fantasy football league and you can play fantasy sports. Then you could walk into work and with all your buddies that are big football fans, you can play fantasy football with Jen, the girl from HR, and Alyssa, the account executive. Why? Because it's 16 weeks, it's easy, and it's fun, and it invests everybody into the league. The NFL survives off of gambling, and until you have a massive gambling scandal, they'll survive anything, and it doesn't matter how many of their players kill somebody. I thought for the briefest of seconds, the Ray Rice incident would change something. And then Greg Hardy reminded us it wouldn't. We'll come back. We're going to shift our attention back to the Sacramento Kings. Will Z joins us next here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. Our man Will Z joining us from the coast of California to talk Kings basketball. Well, I just chuckled because I looked down at my computer and was like, what is this? What is this window open at the bottom? And I still have my Devin Carter film open from Saturday here on a different browser. Will, thanks for joining us. Two, we'll get to Neek and Maxime, of course. For those just tuning in, we're not going to see Maxime Reynaud tonight. Sean Cunningham reported he's dealing with wrist soreness from something that happened on Saturday, so he will be out tonight. But I do want to talk about what you've seen from him so far, Will. But I do want to start with Devin Carter. I had expectations for him entering the summer league, and it was I wanted him to look exactly like he looked on Saturday. Did you have any expectations for Devin Carter? Is there anything that you wanted to see from him this summer league?
Yeah, I think like a lot of other people, it was just, can we see him? Like, the whole thing is the point guard position. And like, I know you've talked about it a lot, but like, that to me feels like his only avenue to really find playing time is if he can get into that point guard role. And I don't know if we've seen that yet. I know the 30 points is great, but it still doesn't feel like he's the type of point guard that Scott Perry kind of wants. But obviously, like, the points are great. But to me, I think I just keep going back to the first game more so than the second game. And the two of them balance out so much where they're on like two opposite ends of the spectrum, where you've got the one that was really good and the one that was really bad. But I keep going back to like the very first few minutes of the first game when he had an open three in transition. I think Neek cut to the rim and passed it out to him, and he had the open three and he didn't take it. I don't remember if he passed or drove it and missed or whatever, but just if he's going to make this Kings team, he's going to need to do different things, I think, than we saw in the second game. And part of that is just hit, catch and shoot threes. And maybe it's because it was his first game and he's been in all the trade rumors and he had a lot on his mind, but I just keep kind of coming back to that and wondering, trying to look at what he's doing now and put that into his possible role with the roster as currently constructed. And I still just don't see it, but maybe I'm with you. I'm not super high on him. So maybe that's just my kind of bias leaning into it a little bit more.
I think more than not being super high on him, I'm not super high on the idea asking him to do something new. Like asking him to do something different, like as the point guard. But, you know, I will give him credit. I thought he looked shaky and uncomfortable with the ball in his hand in game one. Yep. And he just looked completely different in game two. And you take the 10 of 13 aside, you take the 5 of 7 from three. You could take that stuff completely out of the equation and just watch him with the ball in his hands, watching him take the ball off the rim and lead a break, watching him kind of facilitate the offense. He looked like a completely different player from the first game to the second. And I'm not an athlete. I don't know what, because it's not like he got substantially better than he was, you know, 2 days prior. He had obviously just had a bad game, a bad outing, a bad whatever, but he looked so much more comfortable in game number two. And even with that said, I just don't, you know, looking comfortable as kind of the facilitator and the lead guard in a summer league game is one thing, but doing it when, you know, the best defenders in the world are running back on defense trying to stop you, that's an entirely different thing. Of course, you got better players around you. I just don't love the idea. And it's the same with Neek. I don't love trying to force someone into that position because you have too many guys who can't actually play that position.
Right.
It's just not my favorite approach that the Kings might be taking, because we've heard Devin as potential backup point guard minutes, and we've heard Neek as not necessarily backup point guard minutes, but potential point guard minutes. And I don't love either of those things.
Yeah. And it's possible where it might not matter as much as we're all making it out to be, because there's a difference about of being like a point guard when like Dylan Cardwell is your center. obviously, like right now, it still kind of falls in the category of Sabonis. But there's a difference of being a point guard with a like pick and roll center, like a rim runner, and a point guard paired with Domantas Sabonis. Like Sabonis is still going to probably get more of those kind of ball handling when Schroeder's out. So it's possible it could work, and that's all on Doug Christie and the coaching staff and the offensive scheme. Like, can they make the backup point guards, who maybe aren't backup point guards, lives easier by setting up an offense where they don't have to do as much and run it through Sabonis more, which I don't think we saw as much last year. So that's one thing I'll be looking at as the season kind of starts, is what does that all look like? And do we get more of the kind of Sabonis-centric offense back that we saw in the last few years? But I'm with you. Like, both of them, I do think I like Neek more in that role than mm-hmm. Carter.
Mm-hmm.
He looks a little smoother to me in that like point guard spot. But I don't know.
Well, you talk about the Sabonis-centric offense. That can lead us into a conversation about Maxime Reynaud. You said when you joined the stream mm-hmm. during the commercial break, man, it's a bummer he's not playing tonight. He's out with the sore wrist. He was a guy when drafted, people were really talking about like he was a first round pick. Of course, you know, you look at some of the mock drafts and some of the big boards and stuff had him much higher than 42 where he wound up going. And then there's, you know, conversations about him angling his way, wanting to get to Sacramento, wanting to play in Sacramento. And these first two games will have given us a pretty good indication, I think, of, or I don't want to say an indication, that's probably a little bit too strong, but it's given us a pretty good, like if we used our imagination a little bit and thought, hey, what would it look like if he was out there on the floor with Domantas Sabonis? Like what, or what could he look like if he's out there in place of Domantas Sabonis? He offers mm-hmm. a lot of differences that Kings fans have been, and it, not just Kings fans, but like I know we'll talk to James Hammond about 30 minutes. James has been screaming for, you know, a four or five who could stretch the floor and shoot the mm-hmm. three a little bit. And these first two games have shown Max might be that guy.
Yeah. And it's so exciting. It's like we finally got a true like stretch five. And I think it is a really good pairing with Sabonis. And his shot's a little slow, but at the same time, he's 7-1, so maybe it doesn't matter. But to me, I do see – I wrote an article this morning on, like, three bold predictions based on Summer League games because it's Summer League and got to write about something, so why not overreact?
Yeah.
And my bold prediction for Reynaud was that he'll be starting by the end of the season.
Okay.
I think that just his ability to do so many things on the floor, to fit with Sabonis, to push Keegan back down to the three. I have no idea who would come out of the starting spot. I didn't get into that because I don't know.
It's dangerous territory. Yeah, Will, you want to start six. You want to start yeah, six guys. Like, yeah.
We'll leave that for another time.
Yeah.
But in terms of like play style, I think that the two of them work really well together. Like him being able to step out and hit the three. And it's not just him hitting the three, but also Sabonis proving last year that he can hit the three. Mm-hmm. He didn't shoot at high volume, but that still leaves room for Reynaud to operate inside, which he's shown great touch and great like post up. I know he probably won't post up as much as he is now, yeah. But his touch inside can still be utilized with Sabonis out there as well, because Sabonis has more of a consistent three-point shot as well. So it's not just Reynaud being able to step out and hit the three, but vice versa, Sabonis being able to space out and hit the three. And can they run a true five-out offense, which is one of the most lethal ways to kind of build an offense, I think, now, and have every person who's out there be a threat from three?
Yeah, and that's the key word, Will, the threat to hit that three can change the way things go for a lot of guys, especially Domas down in the block, who I guess I'll just continue to beg for him to shoot 14 or 15 times per game instead of 12 or 13. But I guess that's just a hill I'm going to die and rot on, because there's nothing in his career that shows that's ever going to happen.
I know.
So just when you see me sitting on that hill, just give me a glass of water and let me, you know, live a month longer before I ultimately die. Because it just won't happen. So that's Max. So you've got a hot take for Maxime Renault. What about Neek? You know, Neek is another guy who both of these guys played really, really well in those first two games. Neek will go tonight unless we hear something within the next, you know, 4.5 hours or so. We expect Neek to go tonight. And he's been a guy who has had different bursts of, you know, fourth quarter Neek here in these first two games. But what have been your impressions of the first round pick so far?
He's just so poised, like both him and Renault, but Neek especially. I think he just has such a good feel for the game, and his ability to find the ball off the boards and get the rebounds is such a underrated skill. I think his size, like everything, just looks so polished for a rookie, and like it makes sense. He's 5-year senior, right? If I'm remembering right, mm-hmm. And Renault was 4. That it makes sense for him to kind of have that advanced feel for the game, but it's just how he affects the game in so many ways, on defense, on offense, passing, rebounding. He can do a little bit of everything, and that's where it comes in, the difference between like him and Carter. Like, there's such a clear avenue for him to help this team win because he can do a different thing on a night-to-night basis, or can like slot into whatever the Kings need for that moment. Like, if they need him to score, maybe go score. If they need him to just defend, just go defend. If they need him to just focus on rebounding, go do that. But I think his skill set is so diverse that that fits into the holes in the Kings rosters. So if they go like a defense-heavy roster, or defense-heavy lineup, maybe he does a little more on offense, or vice versa. If they go offense, I don't remember which one I said, but you get the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And then same thing with his position. I think he can play multiple positions of need. Not like backup point guard. I still don't know if that's his like ultimate calling card, but the Kings have 2 spots, either the backup point guard or the backup 3.
Mm-hmm.
And he can do either of those, I think. So he has a clear pathway to kind of a key rotational spot that I'm really excited to see how much they use him and what they use him on the NBA team.
You very obviously think highly of Max and his ability to mm-hmm. kind of impact this rotation immediately. Do you feel the same about Neek?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And I think that's good. Do you know Doug a little bit more than most. Do you know what his coaching style with young players is going to be, or do you have any sense?
No idea. No, I have no idea. It feels like I know as a commentator, I know as a guy that you just talk basketball with, he'll mm-hmm. tell you you've got to let guys make mistakes.
That's good.
You've got to let guys make mistakes so you can correct them and they can be better. Otherwise, if the idea of correcting them is not playing them, they don't learn from anything. They just wind up playing scared. With all due respect to Mike Brown, I feel mm-hmm. like he tried to coach players into like a fear. Yeah, obviously this is not the case for Domas and De'Aaron and those type of guys. But like the Terrence Davises, I mean, mm-hmm. the interactions with him and Terrence Davis are unfortunately legendary at this point. Even to a certain degree, like Kevin Huerter, Chris Duarte, yep. the whole saga around that too, it was always, you know, I think Casey, he hit the nail on the head during, I think it was the 7-game win streak after Doug took over. He said, Doug accentuates what you can do rather than harping on what you can't. And sometimes it felt like Mike was harping on what you can't do rather than mm-hmm. accentuating what you do. And as a young player, you have to find out what you can accentuate.
Yeah.
And Doug, at least in my conversations with him before he was Coach Christie, it was a lot of you gotta let these young guys play and figure out the game a little bit. They've gotta learn the game. They've gotta learn to feel the game.
Yeah, so to me, that's a really encouraging sign, I think, for both of them to come in and make an impact. Like, I love hearing that and knowing that they've got some of these young guys that can get minutes and get the experience and make mistakes and learn and be in that environment where they kind of know that it's going to be okay and they'll still get on the court. Like, that makes me even probably more excited for the two of them, like thinking about how Doug will use them and kind of coach them in their early NBA careers.
You think the Kings do anything else before we reconvene for training camp, or are we done?
I don't know. I've looked around a lot. I feel like they could still use another like true power forward, but I keep looking at ideas and I can't think of anyone. Like, I know the Kuzma thing was floated out there. I don't like it. I'm done. I think putting energy into the idea of Kyle Kuzma, like, it would probably be a fine
Will's like,
move.
I am not writing another Kyle Kuzma article.
That's
Absolutely
exactly
not.
what my thought was. Like, I'll pass.
Understood.
But
Understood.
I don't know. Like, it feels like they just have players and contracts that they're not going to be able to move. But at the same time, they still have the mid-level exception. So they could bring in someone for like nothing, theoretically, money-wise. And like, if they want to send out a pick for someone under that 14.1 million, I think they could. I just don't know who it would be.
I don't either, man. I don't either. But I appreciate you, my friend. Thanks for joining us while you're out on the coast with the family. I see we got bobbleheads and autographed baseballs
Yeah.
and a bat and all of that exciting stuff behind you.
Yeah. My parents are big time Giants fans,
Oh,
so
good stuff.
Will Clark signed bat that my mom got for my dad a few years ago.
Did we get a
It's kind of a
Barry
prized
Bonds
possession.
bobblehead a couple of days ago?
I don't think
No,
recently.
okay. I know that was a hot
But
ticket the other
yeah.
day. All of the
Yeah.
Dodgers fans who showed up to Oracle Park got them.
Great.
I appreciate you, Will. Give Hannah and Kennedy our love, and we'll connect again soon, real soon.
Thanks, Damien. Sounds
All right.
good.
All right. It's a man, Will Z, right there on the coast of California. Man, Will really high on Max. Man, you know Will's a numbers guy, so he probably went through the numbers to make sure he wasn't overreacting to anything. And I mean, I understand why everyone's high on Max. You know what the other thing that I think is that maybe, one, be clear, Max has played terrific in these two games. Two, what we learned about him at the draft, coming out of the draft, all of that stuff, that's all also a very big deal. But I think the thing that fans kind of maybe even subconsciously love the most is the fact he plays in a position that the Sacramento Kings have needed for a while. You know, we've talked about the back of five. I know everyone liked, you know, Jonas Valanciunas. He was great in that position, but he was different than Domas. But the shortcomings that the roster needed, Valanciunas had also. Again, Valanciunas was a terrific backup and a more than capable starting center. But he had he the shortcomings of the roster were the same of his. Max is completely different. Max, obviously smaller in size than Jonas Valanciunas, but taller. So now you feel like, because he's, what is it, 7'1"? Oh, we got a rim protector. Oh, might not actually be accurate. I don't know that you have a rim protector, but you have a guy who can learn to be one, because when you're 7'1", you can protect the rim. Now, there's other nuances to it that you've got to figure out that I don't think he has yet, and that's fine. But in time, he could do that. And more importantly, and I'm excited to talk with James Hamm about this coming up at the top of the 3 o'clock hour. More importantly, as Will was just talking about right there, you have that guy who can stretch the floor. You have that guy on the block who can step out, free things up. And again, Will was using the word threat. You have threats to shoot the three. The threat of Maxine to step out of that block, clear things out for Domantas Sabonis, or that defender getting cute and leaving Max out there on the arc, close in on Domas. And Domas, of course, you know, being the, you know, you talk about floor generals, I'd argue that's what Domas is, seeing Max out there and hitting the three. Now, these are all things these are all we can use our imagination to see this work, right? We can use our imagination based off what we've seen in Summer League. We can use our imagination based off what we've seen from Domantas Sabonis during his time, not only with Sacramento, but of course, just throughout his career with Indiana and Oklahoma City, but particularly Indiana and Sacramento. He's a facilitator. He could be a facilitator. He could be a floor general. And the more guys that can hit shots, the better off you are. And that's where so many Kings fans' concern lies with the makeup of this roster, is that you have like a DeMar DeRozan who doesn't shoot a lot of threes. Of course, he shot more last year than he ever had in his career. That's the makeup of the basketball team. I'm not exactly sure, and I've heard 50-11 excuses about why Keegan Murray couldn't shoot that three at a high clip or as high of a clip as he did in years past. But the more three-point shooters you have, the better. And it's the threat of the three that makes it better. Because you can't leave anyone. You can't get lazy. And you leave Keegan, Zach, shoot, Keon, Domas himself, Max. You leave all of those guys. And this goes back to something we talked about 2.5 hours ago. I may not love the construction of this basketball team, but I like the players on it. And it's why the idea of tanking, it's why the idea of blowing it up, it's why the idea of being bad just doesn't work. Now, maybe they are bad. Maybe the Sacramento Kings team does wind up being bad. I can't like see them being like 30 win bad, but I can, honestly, were they 40 wins last year? It was 40 and 42? I'd be surprised if that's what they were. I mean, even if they were marginally better. Again, I can't look past the Mike Brown stuff. I can't look past the De'Aaron Fox stuff. I can't look past all of that silly stuff that happened last year. Of course, you've got a new front office in place, which is going to naturally bring questions about the roster. Scott Perry, B.J. Armstrong, that group of guys that are here, they didn't sign Malik Monk to a contract extension. They didn't draft Keegan Murray. They didn't even trade for Domantas Sabonis. They didn't do any of that stuff. So when a new front office comes in, it's this immediate like, hey, all right, how do they feel about these particular players? There was a concern that maybe this front office doesn't like Keon Ellis because they didn't, you know, do the contract deal, you know, a couple of weeks ago before the deadline. But that's the other thing, too. Everybody wanted the Keon Ellis contract extension. So do I. Everybody wants the Keegan Murray contract extension. Hey, cool, man. So do I. But at what point are we getting to, like, hey, we're just kind of running this back, right? They probably knew at the time we can't trade DeMar DeRozan. We can't trade Zach LaVine. Maybe we don't really want to trade Keegan Murray. We can't trade Malik Monk. I don't know how many players on this roster the Sacramento Kings haven't inquired about training about. I don't know how many players that they haven't had at least one conversation with somebody about, hey, would you be interested in such and such? Maybe there's one, maybe there's some. Maybe there's a bunch. No clue. But I'd be really surprised if they weren't open to just about whatever. What can we do to make this basketball team better? That has to be the first question. And then if the answer involves Malik Monk, if the answer involves DeMar DeRozan, if the answer involves Domantas Sabonis or Keegan Murray, you have those conversations. Now, where that leads you to, that's another story. Because as of right now, 2:42, Monday, July 14th, has led you nowhere. We'll talk much more about these young guys on the Sacramento Kings, the Summer League game tonight, in just the last few weeks as James Hamm joins us for the first time in over a week. Back from Cabo, ready to talk Kings basketball. James Hamm will be with us at the top of the 3 o'clock hour. Plus, the biggest non-story in the NBA became a huge story at Summer League. all for one reason. We'll explain what that is when Dilo and Casey return here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.